This is the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld, and I'm sitting in for Tony this week. Coming up later in the show, we'll talk with Scott Rasmussen about what the polls show regarding the presidential race. Also, original co-chair of the National Day of Prayer, Pat Boone, joins Tony to talk about America's need for prayer. But first, North Carolina's HB2 bill has seen attacks from every angle, but this latest one is straight from the top. HB2, which simply requires people to use the restroom of their biological sex, is being threatened by the White House. The Obama administration has threatened to withhold federal education dollars unless North Carolina repeals HB2. In a press release yesterday, the North Carolina Lieutenant Governor stated, "To use our children and their educational futures as pawns to advance an agenda that will ultimately open those same children up to exploitation at the hands of sexual predators is by far the sickest example of the depths the Obama administration will stoop to in order to, quote, fundamentally transform our nation," end quote. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest of North Carolina joined Tony to talk about it.
Governor Dan Forrest, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always good to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
All right. What's going to be North Carolina's response to these threats from the Obama administration?
Well, I think right now the governor is crafting his response with his legal team. But right now it's a bunch of threats, obviously, from the Justice Department. And the shame of it is here we go again. The Obama administration is willing to hold our children hostage for the sake of advancing their agenda, their radical leftist agenda in our state. How do you pick one state out of 29 that have similar laws, along with the federal government, and say you're going to pick on them and choose that one state to go down this path with and withhold federal funds for education? It's absolutely unbelievable. I guess it shouldn't be unbelievable with this administration, but that's exactly what they're doing. It's extortion, and certainly in North Carolina, we're not going to stand for it.
Well, here's the problem is that you have stood up to the administration. And first, you stood up to their, Brutus and gang that usually comes in, cracks a few kneecaps and stuff through big business. You guys stood up to them. You didn't fold. So now they roll out the Civil Rights Commission. Then they roll out the Department of Education with these subtle threats that they're going to withhold federal dollars. I mean, you're right. It is extortion. But what angers them is that you're one of the first that has stood up to them.
Well, yeah, I would imagine so. And as we can see, that they will stop at nothing to try to get their agenda moved forward. They have 6 months to really get that rolling, and they want to make sure they do it, and they're going to try to use us as the example. But even, Tony, in this letter that was sent out from the Justice Department, it really shows how they're trying to manipulate the law. They pick a couple case examples out of federal law that say they support their case when none of those examples that they're using are even from federal courts that have any jurisdiction over North Carolina. And then on top of that, there's many, many, many more cases that go in the opposite direction. And so they are picking and choosing. There's, as you know, there are federal rules to how you deal with civil cases like this, and they're really not even playing by their own rules.
Yeah, but again, what has happened historically, we saw it in Indiana, we saw it in Georgia, where at the first sign of threats, we unfortunately get some good, elected officials generally, but they cave in the face of the threats. And so the Obama administration really has not seen much resistance. Now, we did see some resistance at the state level on Obamacare, but they're more passionate about this agenda than they even were in taking over the nation's health care system. And
yes,
I do think...
it's absolutely unbelievable. You would think there was nothing else going on in the world. You would think that we don't have a threat from ISIS, that we don't have a threat of terrorism in our own country here, that we don't have threats around the world like North Korea, the Soviet Union, and others that the president could be focused on. But instead, he's traveling the world talking about bathrooms and talking about North Carolina when what we're doing is protecting women and children. I mean, why aren't they dealing with the issues around the world that they should be doing something about and leaving the state sovereignty to deal with this kind of issue?
Let me just a couple. I know you're busy, so I just a couple more questions for you. But there is a really hard push from this administration to get you guys to buckle under. And I think it's, as you pointed out, time is short for them. And they've got to get this done before they leave office, because you guys standing up for this could actually turn the momentum that the president has created for this radical agenda.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he wants to leave this as his legacy. I mean, he has chosen certainly not to leave foreign policy as his legacy. So he's choosing bathrooms in North Carolina and the transgender issue as his legacy. And that's unfortunate. You know, I would hope that he would add protecting women and children to that as well. But it doesn't look like that's part of what they're trying to do.
Well, just know that there are literally thousands of people across the country that stand with you. And I think that the it's been helpful putting some, I guess, some color commentary on this issue by what Target did, although we disagree with it. But their foray into these bathroom facilities, free-for-alls, has helped Americans see what you guys were actually doing. You were trying to protect from this, and now over a million Americans have said, you know what, North Carolina is pretty smart in what they did.
Yeah, and you're seeing, you know, what's good news out of that, Tony, is not just a million people, but the average mom out there who has been shopping at Target multiple times a week and loves Target is now saying, I'm cutting up my red card and I'm going to go to Walmart instead because I am not comfortable with my safety or my child's safety in bathrooms or changing facilities. You know, we really should put pressure on companies like Target to say, what is your policy to protect women and children? You're doing these things, and you think it's for the right reason, but how are you going to protect women and children? And the other thing I'd like to see, Tony, is I'd like to see Congress take this up. You know, this is something that we have watched too often as the federal courts have their way with these kind of issues. I think it's time for members of Congress to step up. This would be a great time to have a hearing in Washington, D.C., looking into the actions of the Justice Department, and especially as it relates to the education funding
yes.
in America.
Without question. And in fact, I talked to a couple members about that the other night, and how these Title IX is being used to bludgeon and beat many states into submission, and only for about 9.6% for every dollar that's spent on education. So they give you less than 10%, but they want 90% of control of what happens in education.
Exactly. And so these kind of acts of extortion, I don't think are going to go over well with the people of North Carolina, especially the parents of North Carolina who are sending their tax dollars to Washington, D.C., and watching Washington, the Obama administration, then take those tax dollars, hold them hostage, and hold, you know, especially the people that are the neediest amongst us in North Carolina, and holding them hostage to get their way here in our state.
I couldn't agree more. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, thanks so much for being generous with your time today. Great to visit with you, and just know we'll continue to watch and track this story.
Thanks, Tony. As always, it's great to be with you, too, and look forward to the next time.
You can find out more about Lieutenant Governor Forrest when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, pollster Scott Rasmussen joins us to talk about what's happening in the presidential election. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
Most of us are aware of ISIS' barbaric practices and their unceasing violation of Christians and other minority groups' religious liberties in Iraq and Syria. When persecution is supported by a nation's laws and/or driven by its culture, it is never acceptable. It deserves our attention. Family Research Council recently hosted a panel discussion entitled Religious Liberty Around the World, Where We Stand as of Spring 2016, with some of the world's leading experts on the topic. To hear this conversation, visit frc.org/university.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld, sitting in for FRC President Tony Perkins. After a big loss in Indiana last Tuesday, Texas Senator Ted Cruz decided to suspend his campaign for president, leaving the GOP nomination in the hands of businessman Donald Trump. The latest polls are showing this could be a significant uphill battle for Trump if he plans to secure the presidency. What does Trump have to do moving forward to win over GOP voters? Pollster and current president of STIRC, Scott Rasmussen, joined Tony with his analysis.
Scott, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always great to be with you. You know, and I've got to chuckle when you hear some of these stories and numbers and analysis, because they remind me how short a memory we have sometimes. Back in 2008, there was a little-known Democratic senator named Barack Obama who decided to challenge the obvious winner, Hillary Clinton. And the Clinton people did not take it well. In fact, I was in the midst of that, and at one point I declared that it's now clear that Barack Obama is going to win the Democratic nomination. I received an organized campaign of angry mail and phone calls. They tied up our office phones for 3 full days saying we had no right to make that decision. And then, just when we thought it was all quiet and safe to do things again, a week before the Democratic convention in 2008, there was another organized phone and email blitz because they were never, ever, ever under any circumstances going to support Barack Obama. And of course, at the end, they did. This is a process that we see repeating itself. What's unusual this time around is usually it's base voters in the Republican side who are left out in the cold. This time, it's the Republican establishment. The shoe's on the other foot, and they don't like it very much.
Well, I'm a believer in the numbers, all right? And I don't mean to say I don't think you have a dog in this hunt, but I just want to make sure. I mean, you're just looking at the numbers. I mean, you've right. not come out for any candidate in this race. So what do the numbers tell us? What does Donald Trump have to do? Because, I mean, based on 2008, 2012, the margins are very narrow for a Republican right. candidate. They cannot afford to lose a lot of vote. When you see some of this exit polling in this Never Trump campaign, how much of that traditional Republican vote and Republican-leaning vote can he afford to lose and still win?
Not very much. I would have expected this year the fundamentals are better for a Republican than they were in 2008 or 2012. There's a number of factors that you would say with a normal candidate on each side, the Republican should have been favored to win the White House. Donald Trump, certainly not a normal candidate. We don't know, let's be clear, none of us expected we'd be talking about him as the presumptive nominee. Just 6 months ago, that would have been a laughable idea. But what we're looking at is a situation where Donald Trump's first task is going to be to win over the Republican Party. And I don't mean in a nominal sense where, somebody says, I guess I'll hold my nose and vote for him. He has to convince Republicans and Republican officials and Republican activists that he really has a plan to win this so that they will commit their heart and soul and intentions and energy to that fight. And if he can't do that in the next 30 to 60 days, the Trump campaign could have an awful lot of trouble. Beyond that, he needs to find a way to make a big portion of the race about Hillary Clinton and not about Donald Trump, because we are going to have a New Jersey-style election. My home state, when we elect governors, a majority of the voters don't like the governor the day they vote for him. A majority dislike Chris Christie the day that we voted for him. So that's what's going to happen in the national election this year. We have two very unpopular candidates, according to all the numbers that we see.
Right.
We have people who are not necessarily inspiring a positive vision for the nation. And Donald Trump needs to show a way in that environment that he can actually be drawing attention to Hillary Clinton's weaknesses instead of making it all about himself.
Well, Scott, that was my next question on the issue of unfavorability, which Donald Trump has a very high unfavorable rating. Of course, Hillary Clinton does as well. How big of a factor is that in an election?
It's a huge factor. You have to have some reason to go out and vote for someone. And sometimes you can get away with voting against the other person. Now, there are some Republicans who will say, I can't imagine Hillary Clinton in the White House, and I will show up and do that. But it's a lot tougher if you don't have a candidate you're excited about. In fact, I think that was part of Ted Cruz's challenge. He really became the not Trump category rather than someone to vote for. So I think the unfavorables and the negative perceptions of Donald Trump right now are a concern for mm-hmm. his campaign. I would say, though, that winning adds some legitimacy and probably will take a little bit of the edge off those numbers. And this is part of, we forget these things, but this is part of what the primary process is
right.
all about. 6 months ago when Donald Trump began this and started winning, or 4 months ago in Iowa, people said, well, he can get 35% of the vote, but he can't do more than that. He's only winning in a divided field. When the field thins, he'll stop winning. And then we were told, well, yeah, but the other guys are a little weak. He'll never get more than 50% of the vote. Now, Donald Trump has won more than 50% of the vote in eight straight states, and his win in Indiana was very impressive. That will, again, take a little bit of the edge off, but among independent voters, he is going to remain a very unpopular figure. It can be a real challenge to get out the vote.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, my guest, Scott Rasmussen. We're talking about the numbers of what it's going to take for a Republican candidate, looks like it's going to be Donald Trump, to win the general election. Let me focus. We just got a couple minutes left. Let me focus, Scott, on the constituency that that I speak to represent primarily. That is the more conservative voters and evangelicals. Now, we've seen that Donald Trump has gotten the broader category of evangelicals, but when you break that down for those who attend church on a weekly basis, those being that faith is more of a fundamental driver in their lives, they tended, the majority of them tended to go to Ted Cruz. What is he going to have to do, or does he have to do anything to get those voters? Does he need those voters that Ted Cruz had?
He absolutely needs those voters that Ted Cruz had. One thing that would help him is to get Ted enthusiastically on board. I'm not sure if that's possible, but that's something that he's going to try. He started down that path last night by saying nice things about the senator. And, you know, to a lot of people, it sounds hypocritical for him to bash the guy one day and say nice things the next. But a lot of Americans think, well, you know, that's what hockey teams do. They beat each other up, and at the end of the playoffs, they shake hands. And so, you know, maybe there's something there. I think there's one issue that evangelical voters would have a clear preference for Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton on, and that is appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is obviously a vital issue. Right now, the court very evenly divided. And as you look down the road, if Hillary Clinton is elected, and especially if she can bring in a Democratic Senate, she has the chance to reshape the Supreme Court for a generation. You never know what Donald Trump's going to do, but there's a lot of indications that he's listening to some good people and that his Supreme Court appointments would be significantly better than Hillary Clinton's. And that's the message you have to get out to evangelical voters.
I think you're absolutely right. I do think that's one of the fundamentals, because evangelicals understand what the court has done to the cultural and moral and political landscape of the country in the last quarter of a century. Scott, always great to have you on, and make me this promise that we can check in with you throughout this process, because there's going to be a lot more numbers to look at.
Always happy to talk with you, and hope that your folks will check in at sterk.com and check out my writing as well.
We certainly will. We'll put a link up and encourage people to go there. In fact, we got it at the website. Scott, thanks so much. Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Scott Rasmussen when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we return, singer, songwriter, and prayer warrior Pat Boone joins us to talk about the National Day of Prayer and Saturday Night Live. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
It's easy to get discouraged by the headlines. It can often feel as if God has left the building and we are on our own. As a response, Warren Cole Smith recently spoke at the Family Research Council about his book, Restoring All Things. In his soul-stirring presentation, Smith challenges the church to continue Christ's work of restoring all things by running toward the gunfire of cultural decline, to celebrate what is good, contribute what is missing, stop what is evil, and restore what is broken. Visit frc.org/university to view this talk and many more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld, sitting in for FRC President Tony Perkins. You know, I believe evangelicals are the moral compass in this country, a voice that will fight to bring us back to the truth of the gospel. Well, I am not alone in this fight. The God's Not Dead movie series has had major success across the country, encouraging Christians to stand for their faith in the midst of trial. Well, Saturday Night Live thought they'd get some laughs and make fun of the latest movie. One of the main characters, played by Pat Boone, called them on their sacrilege. Joining Tony to talk about his stand for truth, singer, actor, producer, songwriter, and author, Pat Boone.
Pat, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, Tony. Good to talk to you again, and I'm so glad you're holding forth still and that you're mentioning the Day of Prayer, because Bonnet Bright and I, yes, we were instrumental in getting our dear friend, didn't take any arm twisting to get Ronald Reagan to sign it, into perpetual law on our national calendar. And I feel, you know, you look for milestones in your life. What what are the significant moments? And one of the most significant moments in my life, the privilege of getting added to our national calendar, not something that had to be initiated every year from scratch as it was up till then, from the days of Lincoln, but to Ronald Reagan, after Ronald Reagan, it became part of the national calendar in perpetuity, unless some scoundrel who comes to the White House may, by executive order, scratch it from the calendar, which I hope never happens. Our particular current occupant has taken part in the national, the President's Day of Prayer, and I'm glad of that. But the National Day of Prayer, praying for those in authority over us, as the Bible tells us to do, is part of our national obligation and opportunity. What a privilege, Tony, you know, to have the God of all creation listen to us as we beseech Him for our nation. And right now would be a very good time to ask Him to take as strong a hand on our behalf as He's willing to do.
And I was at an event last night honoring Shirley Dobson for 25 years of being chairwoman of the National Day of Prayer. And I was just thinking, you know, 25 years ago, no one ever thought we would be where we are today, where public expression of faith in Jesus Christ and prayer is attacked by our government, mocked by entertainers. And I'm so grateful that there was the forethought to get this into law, because we probably wouldn't be able to do this today.
I think you're right. And Shirley and Jim Dobson, they took over when Vonette had to bow out, and I with her, as you know, being active in the leadership, they were in a great position with Focus on the Family at that point to take the ball and run with it, and they did, and have done it ever since. So God will bless them mightily for what they're doing, and we as a nation need to be very grateful for spiritual leaders as well as political leaders, and pray for them, because they're, you know, people try to separate church and state. This was never Jefferson's idea. His only idea in using that phrase was to keep government out of the church's affairs totally.
Right.
When he said Congress shall make no law, he meant no law, pro or con. I mean, what other meanings can you give to no law than to keep your hands, government, off of people's expression of faith? Well, Hobby Lobby is one that had to go all the way to the Supreme Court and fought to be able to express their faith through their company the way they choose, and they won. But boy, not everybody can win at the Supreme Court level, but that's what it's been taking.
Right. You never thought we'd have to fight for what is enumerated as our first freedom.
Yeah.
I want to shift gears we just got a couple minutes left, and I want to congratulate you on a great role that you played in God's Not Dead 2. I watched the movie, and I was, you know, poking my kids, hey, that's a friend of mine up there. And I just thought it was a great movie. I was thrilled. Our church actually bought out two theaters and on a Sunday night, and we all went and saw it, over 800 people.
Great.
But I want to go back to what I was saying earlier about how the culture is mocking it. And you've taken issue with something Saturday Night Live did.
Oh, yes. Listen, they mocked a film that didn't exist. Our film was about whether a teacher could answer an honest question in a classroom about Martin Luther King. Yes, he did quote Jesus answering the student. Well, because of that, the atheistic parents get a high-powered lawyer, the ACLU, and they want to get her fired, and they want to get her to apologize, say she'll never mention the name of Jesus in a school classroom again. That's what our movie's about. Saturday Night Live made it seem that our movie was about homosexuality, same-sex marriage, and opposition to that, and instead of a school teacher, a woman who works at a bakery, having to profess in court that God is gay. This is what their blasphemous supposed parody was. And got involved. I hadn't even seen the episode they did, a very well-produced parody, supposedly, but it was a parody of something that we had not done. They were creating an issue and then attacking it, and we had nothing to do with that issue. But
does that surprise you? Does that surprise you that they would make something up?
No, because when they asked me, when I was asked by several interviewers, the Hollywood Reporter, and then later some of the other newspapers, when I was asked if I was going to have, you know, demand Lorne Michaels or the other the folks involved with Saturday Night Live to apologize. I said, they're not going to apologize. They don't care what I think. They've been attacking Christians and everything moral and spiritual for years now. They're not going to answer to us, but I suggest they consider they're going to answer to the one whose name they defamed. And that is very, very serious business. So I am so upset and concerned, as I have been for a long time, about the numbing and the dumbing of America. Actually, the dumbing came first and then the numbing. The dumbing is that we don't seem to, by and large, stay abreast of what's happening to our liberty. They're being taken away. They're being eroded. There are people that have been appointed to offices, regulatory agencies, by people who know what they're doing, but they are determined to take God's name off every building, out of public life. They don't think it belongs. They resent it. They're going to be calling various scriptures, like the first chapter of Romans, hate speech, and any preacher that dare preach it, even in the sanctity of his own church, may be arrested. And if he does it, dares to speak about it publicly, maybe even worse. And then the numbing comes after the dumbing. The numbing is that even when we know that our liberties are being attacked and that our morals are being eroded in television and movies, that we're not concerned enough to even try to do anything about it.
Right.
Being numbed and dumbed, and virtually we're going to lose our DNA if we don't finally get some backbone and stand up, and Christians in particular say, look, we're the biggest majority in the U.S., forget Democrat or Republican.
Right.
Christians have more authority in this country than any other group. If we would register, if we would be knowledgeable, if we would vote and go into the voting booth having been armed with information about who the candidates are and what they stand for and what they're likely to do and support when they come to office.
Well, you can find out more about today's guests when you go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234.